We present a program in observance of the 7th anniversary of the ratification of the Kellogg-Briand Pact by the United States Senate. This program is under the auspices of the People's Mandate Committee, which is conducting a worldwide campaign to secure 50 million signatures to a mandate to the governments of the world to end war in accordance with the pledge given in the Kellogg Pact. In the United States, 62 national organizations are cooperating in the mandate campaign, initiated by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and launched on the birthday of the late Jane Addams, world-known peace leader. We are having a conference here in our Washington studios this afternoon in which Mrs. Raymond Clapper of the People's Mandate Committee is discussing with four outstanding members of the United States Senate ways that the pact for the renunciation of war can be made effective. The senators present are Senator Arthur Kapler of Kansas, Senator Edward P. Costigan of Colorado, Senator James P. Pope of Idaho, and Senator Gerald P. Nye of North Dakota. You are to have the privilege of listening in on this conference. Mrs. Clapper is speaking.
Mr. Senators, I want to emphasize that the purpose of the World Campaign, which the People's Mandate Committee is conducting, is to make the Kellogg-Briand Pact a reality. Attention is now concentrated on this noble pact because of the action which governments have taken regarding what is held to be Italy's violation of the treaty. In the 7 years since the Kellogg Pact was ratified, we all know that some of the governments signing it have not followed policies really consistent with its pledge. We have gone ahead with the age-old custom of preparing for war. It is therefore particularly helpful to discuss the pact with members of the United States Senate, for you are in a position to ensure action necessary to carry out the treaty. I should like to read this mandate to you. We, the people, are determined to end war. War settles no problems. War brings economic disaster, needless suffering, and death to us and our children. We demand that our government, having renounced war in the Kellogg-Briand Pact, stop immediately all increase of armaments and of armed forces, use existing machinery for peaceful settlement of present conflicts, secure a world treaty for immediate reduction of arms as a step toward complete world disarmament, secure international agreements founded on recognition of world interdependence to end the economic anarchy which breeds war. I should like to explain that, as we sign this mandate, people in all countries of the world are signing it with us, united in the determination to secure permanent peace. Senator Kapper, we know that you've given many years of courageous efforts to promote peace. Do you think that the people of our country are now ready to observe the pact for the renunciation of war?
As we knew when we ratified the Kellogg Pact 7 years ago today, formal renunciation of war as the means of settling disputes among nations has not changed the world overnight. But the ratification of the peace pact was an important milestone in the march of mankind toward higher and saner levels in international relations. Observance of the Kellogg Pact will come when the peoples of the world, family of nations, not only desire it, but also insist upon their own leaders observing the principles enunciated in the pact. I believe the great majority of the people of the United States are ready for its observance today. I know that they desire peace, that they hate war. The peace pact has materially assisted in crystallizing public opinion in favor of planning to avoid wars. Our people not only desire peace, they are seeking effective ways of preserving peace. They are looking for a means to attain that object. That is why the passage of neutrality legislation is possible today where it would have been impossible a decade ago. As evidence of how the people of the Middle West feel, I'm going to state to you briefly the results of a poll made last month by the Kapper Publications, covering 7 states in the heart of the nation. The interesting thing to me in this poll is that the nearly 100,000 persons who took part in it not only expressed their hatred of war, but also voted by overwhelming majorities for 7 different steps in keeping the United States out of foreign wars. Now, here is the result of that poll, including the questions asked. First, should the United States keep out of all foreign wars? Answer was yes, 90 to 1. Second, do you favor giving the people a vote on the question before going to war? The answer was yes, and 40 to 1. Third, do you favor taking the profit out of war by drafting industry as well as men in case of war? Answer was yes, 40 to 1. Fourth, do you favor world disarmament? Answer was yes, 11 to 1. Fifth, do you favor the manufacture of munitions at government plants instead of private plants? Answer was yes, 10 to 1. Sixth, do you favor the United States or any of its citizens or institutions lending money to foreign nations to be used for war purposes? The answer was no, 45 to 1. Seventh, do you favor the people of the United States selling supplies to warring nations? No, 25 to 1. Eighth, do you favor compulsory military training in colleges? The answer was no, 6 to 1. I say, my friends, our people are in favor of positive action to keep the United States out of war.
Thank you, Senator Capper. Senator Costigan, you can speak with authority. You have had experience in bringing about changes for the welfare of the people. Do you think that a great expression of popular opinion, such as our campaign to secure 50 million signatures, can be used effectively to stop war?
Mrs. Clapper, your question invites comment on the significance of your League's campaign to enlist popular judgment and conscience in support of peace and civilization. Public opinion can build lasting peace over all threats of outlawed wars. Similarly, in spite of legalistic denials of general welfare, public opinion is the master key with which to unlock many gates now needlessly suffocating life, liberty, happiness, and civilization. To be sure, sound public opinion on peace and its instruments must unfailingly be trained by self-government, free speech, free education, accepted standards of personal and social security, and industrial justice. Indeed, in the absence of such assurances, popular judgment will at times lead to fatal national inconsistencies. It is immensely important, therefore, to recognize that the famous Paris Peace Pact expresses our world's agreement that war and civilization can no longer coexist. One or the other must end. That treaty was and is well designed to fire the world's imagination and inspire its cooperation in letter and spirit for peace and civilization. Little more than 7 years ago, public opinion in practically every country enthusiastically hailed the Paris Peace Pact. It represents an historic achievement, though the reservation by some countries of the right to disregard the pledge against war when self-preservation is thought in danger has been wantonly used to justify needless wars in South America, Asia, and Africa. On the other side, the healing possibilities of public opinion have rarely recorded a more notable victory than the recent reversal under the protesting pressure of outraged public morality of the nearly successful plan to approve a settlement of the present war in Africa under terms stamping national plunder and aggression with victory. Mrs. Capper, what has been said by me is commonplace enough, but in this instance, the commonplace is vital. Without supporting public opinion, the noblest moral declarations for peace will fail. Much has been said about our duty to find practical devices or implements to make the treaty work. That is merely another way of repeating that the pledge against war will collapse unless we eliminate, so far as possible, the chief underlying causes of war, particularly its removable inducements to savage competition for place, power, property, and profit. For that reason, opponents of war in Congress are now urging neutrality safeguards, the refusal of passports to citizens who seek to give first place to their personal convenience or ambitions, whatever the national risk, embargoes on financial credit and shipments to war makers and war zones of arms, munitions, and contraband, restricted profits for the beneficiaries of war, and other effective cooperation to save or restore peace. But the truest word is that the most essential instrument for enforcement is instant, helpfully expressed, united protest against the causes and evils of war instinctively springing from the passionate moral convictions of mankind.
Thank you, Senator Costigan. Senator Polk, Senator Costigan has mentioned the neutrality measures now before Congress in which we know you are interested. We should like to hear whether, in your opinion, these measures are in line with the obligations of the Kellogg Pact.
7 years ago, when the pact was ratified by the Senate, its sponsors maintained that the United States should, in cooperation with other nations, prevent aggressive warfare. This, in effect, is a system of collective security under which we would cooperate with other nations to enforce peace. Neutrality, on the other hand, involves no international cooperation, but has for its purpose the complete political isolation of the United States. If we adhere to the principles of the Kellogg Pact, we are, in effect, joining with other nations to stamp out the crime of war. If we follow the doctrine of neutrality, we are seeking a storm cellar. The people of the United States are almost unanimous in their desire to maintain peace, but there is considerable confusion as to policies which will enable us to do so. Neutrality legislation will not provide an absolute guarantee of peace, but it should be tried. It will tend to reduce the points of friction between the United States and other nations, but it is really an emergency program of immediate assistance in maintaining the peace of the individual nation rather than a comprehensive program for international goodwill. There are two forms of neutrality. Legalistic neutrality, based on the doctrine of freedom of the seas, will permit indiscriminate trade with all belligerents. If we insist on trading, we must be prepared to fight for the privilege, and history shows that the doctrine has repeatedly involved us in war. The second theory, strict neutrality, means that we stop trade with all belligerents to avoid friction and incidents which lead to war. The difficulty with this theory is that cessation of trade eventually results in depression, which is sometimes as detrimental in its effect as war itself. Any neutrality bill which may be drafted will be a compromise between these two extremes. Neutrality legislation is merely a temporary expedient which has never proved entirely successful in the past. After all, the best way to stay out of war and the only foolproof way to avoid it is international cooperation to prevent wars from starting. That is the basic principle of the Kellogg Pact and the one to which we must eventually pledge the United States if civilization is to progress toward the ideal, law-abiding, peaceful world community.
Thank you, Senator Polk. Senator Nye, we know the Senate Munitions Investigating Committee, which you head, wants legislation to prevent war. Senator Costigan and Senator Polk have spoken of the neutrality measures before Congress. What other legislation should be immediately enacted to stop war?
Mrs. Clapper, we should first of all write a strong neutrality policy. Then get out of the present mad armament race and confine our preparations to strictly national defense. Enact the War Profits Bill, which will take the profit out of war and find the means of taking profit out of preparedness. If we are really in good faith in our participation in the Kellogg-Briand Pact, why is it that this world of participants in the pact are so madly bent in their present armament race? More than that, why is the United States head and shoulders ahead of every other nation in this race? It seems to me that there is room for a greater demonstration of consistency. No nation can long bear the constantly increasing burden which armaments are causing. 17 years following the war to end war finds us spending more money getting ready for more war than we ever spent before. A preparedness budget of $300 million a year once was considered large. Now it has grown to over $1 billion a year. History does not substantiate the contention that the best guarantee of peace is armament building on a large scale. One must never overlook the fact that these mad races lead inevitably and invariably to war. I wish we could and would confine ourselves to a strictly national defense. Doing this would at once set a splendid example and greatly lighten a frightful financial burden. Certainly, in doing this, we would at least be putting into effect the fuller purposes of the Kellogg-Briand Pact.
You have been listening to a program arranged by the People's Mandate Committee. This is the National Broadcasting Company.